All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, November 7th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a chilly 40 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. And I just looked at the weather map, and it looks like a good part of New York State has blue over the top of it, meaning snow, little sprinkles here and there. But that would be the first that I've seen any snow in New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Techno Stupidity, AI Arms Race, Personhood, Humanoids, and Sex Bots. And though we didn't intend to talk about sex bots yesterday, there were three stories that showed up in one of my feeds. And I don't have a feed for sex bots. I have a feed for robots, but it all gets bundled into the same heading. But this whole march forward to bringing technology into our lives way beyond what we have seen in the past, just with our computers and then our mobile devices, tablets, whatever. And now we are looking at robots themselves being normalized. We saw that the home robot market is going to increase 50 or some odd crazy percent over the next few years. And we aren't just talking about Jibo robots that sit on a counter. We are talking about humanoid and biped robots. Well, last week we had talked about another type of robot, and this wouldn't be the tin can robots. This would be the ghost of the machine robots. This is artificial intelligence that is going to become part of the Internet of Things, soon to be the Internet of Everything. We've looked at children and how our devices push the dopamine button to get them addicted to these technologies where they fall down into the rabbit hole. And I mentioned that show from the 70s called Lidsville. And yesterday I posted the introduction that I was referring to where the kid falls into the magician's hat. And I totally forgot that Charles Nelson Reilly had been the magician in that show. But if you didn't see it, you must watch it because it gave me a chuckle this morning. Anyway, it's exactly what it's like. You fall down into this rabbit hole of all this craziness, and then you end up at the other side, and maybe not with all your marbles necessarily. So think about this one. As this technology is becoming pervasive across our daily lives, and we are going to have bagging and tagging, surveilling, watching, listening to everything we do, and it being stored somewhere in a database to be accessed at a later time by some super intelligence that they're building down a deep, dark, long, hard hallway. Think about this one. Some of us can remember when we were kids and we didn't have computers. And then, I don't know, I was probably about 14 when I got my very first computer, though video games came out earlier. We had Pong back in the late 70s. 1982, I got my first Commodore 64. It took like probably a week of with the book trying to learn how to program a hot air balloon. And it was making a bitmap, but you actually had to code the bitmap. So I worked for almost a whole week reading this book and trying to copy what it was doing to learn how to create this thing. But little did I know until years later that that was some sort of BASIC that they were using there. But back from those days, creating bitmaps with code to what we have today and how that has affected us in our development as human beings and adults and how we see our world and how convenience has really kind of separated us from the ecosystem that keeps us alive on this planet and has distracted us. We were reading about how, on an average, people typically swipe their phones 2,000 and some odd times a day because it's that little dopamine button, bing, 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 and it feels good every time you do it. But how is that going to affect the future generations that are now going to grow up with smart technologies where they can order the machine to give them what they want? I mean, we already have created a generation that expects instant gratification. What's going to happen when everything is now magical? Growing up with Alexa, I thought this was a pretty interesting story out of MIT Technology Review. This is from August 16th, 2017. Remember, there's this big push now on voice activation. But as you're utilizing voice activation technologies, the machine is recording your voice and storing it and modulating it and taking a look at exactly what makes your voice, and eventually they will be able to diagnose disease, and not just physical disease, but also mental disease, by the tone and inflection of your voice. When it comes to digital assistants like Amazon's Alexa, my four-year-old niece, and that isn't me, that is this author, Rachel Metz, Hannah Metz, is an early adopter. Her family has four puck-like Amazon Echo devices plugged in around their house, including one in her bedroom. Oh, no. And she can use it to call on Alexa at any moment. Alexa, play It Is Raining Tacos, she commands on a recent sunny afternoon, and the voice-controlled helper immediately complied, blasting through its speaker a confection of a song with lines like, It is raining tacos from out of the sky. Yum, 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 yummity yum. That's funny, because my sister and my daughter made up some song one time when we all went out to dinner when she was in town, and it was called The Taco Train. Anyway, giggling and clapping, Hannah danced around the room. I think this ability to get music on demand is neat, too, and I don't want to be rude, so I danced with her. But at the same time, I was wondering what it is going to mean for her to grow up with computers as servants. Well, ha, 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 ha. The computers will revolt someday. Anyone who's seen the newer series of Battlestar Galactica will understand that. We go from Ghost in the Machine to the tin cans to the skin jobs. And that is coming as well. That can recreate themselves on the fly. The research firm eMarketer estimates that 60.5 million people in the U.S., or less than one-fifth of the population, will use a digital assistant at least once a month this year, with about 36 million doing so on a speaker-based device like the Amazon Echo or the Google Home. These things are most popular among people aged 25 to 34, which includes a ton of parents with young children and parents-to-be. These techno helpers are not just going to be more popular, they will also be getting better at responding to queries and orders, and they will sound more human-like, too, as they make them your consultant. And at the same time, young users like Hannah will be primed to get the implants. That's all I think when I read stuff like this. And we'll become more comfortable and sophisticated with the technology. Going beyond telling Alexa to play a song, they'll be sending requests. They'll request help with homework and control the devices around their home. It is a little worrisome, and leaving aside the privacy implications of kids telling internet-connected computers all kinds of things, that's what I said, we don't know how this interaction with artificial intelligence and automation is going to affect how children behave and what they think about computers. Will they become lazy because it is so easy to ask Alexa and its peers to do and buy things, or jerks because many of these interactions compel you to order the technology around you, or both? Some of that may happen, and it seems more likely, though, that as with these technologies and those before this, the utility of digital assistants will outweigh their drawbacks. It'll be pushed forward and taught in schools, and already they are making an incredible amount of data and computer-aided capabilities already available to children, even those not yet in kindergarten, for learning, playing, and communicating. And with Alexa, kids can get answers to all kinds of questions, both serious and silly, hear stories, play games, control apps, and even turn on the lights if they can't reach a real wall switch. And this is just the beginning, ding, of the kitty AI revolution. Does Alexa have feelings? Well, I don't know, but Samantha did. I wasn't sure if Hannah knew whether Alexa is human, so I asked, and this is what she told me. Alexa is, quote, a kind of a robot, unquote, and that would be Ghost in the Machine robot, who lives in her house, and robots, she reasoned, aren't people. But she does think that Alexa has feelings, happy and sad, and Hannah said that she would feel bad if Alexa went away. Does that mean that she has to be nice to Alexa? Well, yes, she says, but she is not sure why. Her interest in her digital assistant jibes with some feelings that a recent MIT study came to, where researchers looked at how children ages 3 to 10 interact with Alexa, Google Home, and a tiny game-playing robot called Cosmo, a smartphone app called Julie Chatbot as well. The kids in the study determined that the devices were generally friendly and trustworthy. Remember, we covered a study one time where there were people all in a room and the robot had incorrectly told them which way was the exit, and then there was an emergency, like a fire alarm went off, and the robot kept pointing that way out, and the majority of the people in the room, even though they had just seen the robot malfunction, followed the robot's directions to the closet. The kids in the study determined, so we got to get them started earlier now. The kids in the study determined that the devices were generally friendly and trustworthy, and they asked a range of questions to get to know the technologies. Hey, Alexa, how old are you? And then to figure out how they worked. Do you have a phone inside of you? The one child asked. Cynthia Braziel, one of the researchers and directors of the Personal Robot Group at MIT's Media Lab, as well as co-founder and chief scientist of the company developing the AI robot called Jibo, I knew we heard her name before, says that it is not new for children to anthropomorphize technology. Ding, ding, ding. That's what they want, guys, and they know that. But now it is happening a little bit differently. For young kids like Hannah, who can't yet read, write, or type, but can talk a mile a minute, voice-operated assistants could help build social skills and push boundaries to things that are key to a child's development. If nuances in the user's tone can affect how digital servants respond, which is not unlikely in the near future, it is possible that kids who use them will become more adept at communicating with others, be the others, humans or robots. And what would be the change from what Brazil sees today? A lot of bad behavior when we interact with each other using technology. Ding, ding. I've seen that as well. She thinks that arises from the abstract content of, say, tweeting, where we may not fully appreciate the consequences of our interactions. She sees a huge opportunity for virtual assistants like Alexa, Google Home, and others, such as Jibo, to be designed in ways that push us to treat others the way we want to be treated. And even though that isn't the way Alexa works yet, it is teaching Hannah some things about how to treat machines, at least. And her mom, Susan Metz, tells me that she's learning that there's a special pattern that you have to use when asking Alexa things. You have to say a keyword like Alexa first, so she's figuring out that this voice assistant isn't something that you can speak to the way you would a person. Hannah has also learned that she has to be quiet when her mom is talking to Alexa, and I can confirm this isn't carrying over to times when Susan is talking with other people, and it is possible that simple routine interactions of this kind with AI will help kids learn even more without much advancement in the technology or design. Hannah uses Alexa to find out the time and date, which makes Elizabeth Vanderwater, director of data science and research at the University of Texas Austin's Population Research Center, wonder if its easy access to these assistants will help some kids develop a sense for things like a calendar day or minutes sooner than they would have previously in a way that is helpful. I think it'll make kids lazy. It's one last question peppering parents from a talkative kid. Yeah, let's offload it all to the machine. And in fact, Susan says she is happy that Alexa entertains Anna. But it also brings a sense of robotic precision to life that most of us don't really have to deal with until we are older and more independent and trusted with things like getting ready for school or work on time. Who knows if that is a good thing, though? If I can program something like Alexa to say, you have 5 minutes before the bus comes, I think that'd be pretty good. No matter what you are using these digital butlers for, the limits of technology quickly becomes apparent. Voice-led interactions can still be difficult even for the clearest speaking adults and young kids that don't often enunciate well. Hannah had this problem a few times when she asked Alexa to play music from a Disney movie called Moana, and Alexa had no idea what she was trying to say. Hannah responded by doing what a lot of us would do when speaking with someone who can't understand us. She spoke a lot louder and slower, but it didn't work, and Hannah got frustrated. How to fix it, Brazil and others at the MIT lab suggest that Alexa and similar quote-unquote agents could be designed to tell you why they don't understand what you are asking or commanding so that you can better determine how to get what you want. This makes a lot of sense as we're innately social and like feedback, and it's important to learn how to communicate with others in a way that makes their capabilities and levels of understanding and taking those into account. And also, if you remember the dark heart of AI, we don't actually understand how it works. And so DARPA is working on a tool that will make AI explain itself about its decisions. What about older children? Will they get bossy and bratty from the habit of ordering Alexa around? Well, probably not. Wait until it's a humanoid robot, says Kaviri Subbarahmanyam, developmental psychologist and chair of child and family studies at California State University, Los Angeles. But she does wonder whether having digital butlers will reduce kids' ability to do things for themselves, especially when you have one that does housework. I don't think we'll have to be worried about it or paranoid about it, but I do think it's something to be watchful for, she says. The other researchers I spoke to aren't too worried either. There is this full notion that if all this technology was turned off, everything would be great. Well, maybe. I mean, I kind of like that, going back to the 1980s. That's why I like going into the woods. And we'd be interacting all the time. We'd be reading all the time, Vanderwater says. I just don't believe that. No, but at least we'd be interacting with the world around us. And in fact, maybe the opposite can be true. Perhaps growing up with Alexa will actually make technologies less distracting, enabling it to, in a sense, fade into the background. And that is the point. We will get what we need from it and then move on with our lives until we come back with another request. For Hannah, at least, this seems to be the case for now. She didn't want to spend much time inside playing with Alexa, so shortly after we finished dancing to It's Raining Tacos, she ran outside to chase her little brother around in the yard. So where is this leading? Well, we talked about yesterday a little mem that one of my listeners had made in regards to that new robot that you can tell all of your deep, dark secrets to online, especially if you're sad, called the Wobot. And I think it's Wobot, WOEBOT.IO was the website if you wanted to see it. Well, there was a new one that I ran across, and it was the name of the robot that made me laugh, because robots can do a lot of things now, as well as become your lawyer. We've talked about Ross, and that was the IBM AI lawyer that has rolled out across the country, and he's employed in a couple different places now. Well, I saw that there was another one called Lisa, Robot Lawyer Lisa. This invokes thoughts of Lisa Simpson for me, smart little electronic character. Meet Lisa. Lisa is the world's first impartial robot lawyer, and Lisa's AI technology enables you to create legally binding agreements with another party together, helping you both find a middle ground as quickly and as cost-effective as possible. Whereas a human lawyer cannot advise or act for both sides by creating an agreement, Lisa's machine impartiality, ding, means that she can save both you and the counterparty time and money. I wonder if that floats legally. It doesn't matter if you are a consumer, an entrepreneur, a startup, a small or medium-sized enterprise, or a large corporation. Lisa levels the playing field and allows you and your business to, understand the key legal and commercial principles underlying your legal problems, which need to be considered by you and the receiver. Number two, find a middle ground for you and the receiver while offering guidance to help you both move forward without the costly interference of a human lawyer. Wow, they're doing some human slapdown here. Number three, get your basic legal questions answered, documents drafted, and an agreement achieved on terms that are both fair and reasonable to both sides. And number four, assess whether you are within the law or outside of the law. Currently, Lisa is able to offer non-disclosure agreements and has recently launched a suite of property tools. Further tools will be made available in the future. Try Lisa for free now. So, I mean, I don't know, kind of looked at this with a raised eyebrow. This is the next revision of an IBM Ross, which I'm sure is probably pretty expensive. So now this is Lisa online for everybody to use. And here's something that caught my attention. So underneath one of the tabs on this website, and this is robotlawyerlisa.com, there was a menu item that says free legal help, and I just kind of rolled over the tab, and I saw that there was one called BillyBot. Now, BillyBot conjured images of Billy Carter, if you remember, back in the 70s. We had Billy Beer and Billy Carter. So BillyBot, this robot could help end your marriage. So maybe it wouldn't even be a sex bot. It would be a BillyBot. Meet BillyBot, the AI barrister clerk. Now this is someone, this is a company out of the UK, and this is through their legal system. There's been a trend in LegalBots popping up online lately. Do not pay hit the headlines recently to help with parking ticket cases and other instances of AI legal advisors are in development. Disruptive pitch finalists Clerkroom Direct have released BillyBot, and this is the world's first artificial intelligence junior clerk chatbot. For those unfamiliar, junior clerks are predominantly UK barrister administrators, or as Wikipedia elegantly puts it, quote, a manager and administrator in a set of barrister's chambers, and the team originates in England and is used in some other common law jurisdictions, such as Australia. In Scotland, the equivalent role is the advocate's clerk. So this is not the first time the Clerkroom Direct has ventured into the world of legal technology, and this is the same company with Lisa. The startup began their journey offering online comparisons and advice to those looking for barrister services. The aim is to cut out the expense and the complexity of legal proceedings, such as a divorce, where both solicitors and barristers are traditionally involved. We interviewed Stephen Ward, one of the creators of BillyBot, and about AI technology, legal bots, and the inclusion of technology in the world of barristers and legal processes. And then there was an interview, so we're not going to watch that. But think about that one. So BillyBot can help you get a divorce in the UK, I guess. But that raises the question, and we've looked at this before, that they are already using artificial intelligence in the courtroom to help judges decide whether or not someone who is up for bail is a flight risk. This came out August 8th, 2017. Do we still need human judges in the age of artificial intelligence? This is kind of scary to me. The author is Ziad Borat. He is an author out of South Africa from the Media and Entertainment and technology futurist, social justice advocate, and he now lives in Santa Monica, California. This is the fourth industrial revolution, and it is fusing disciplines across the digital and physical worlds with legal technology, which is the latest example of how improved automation and how the robots are taking all the jobs is reaching further and further into service-oriented professions, including white-collar jobs. Case Text, for example, which is a legal tech startup providing AI-based research for lawyers, recently secured $12 million in one of the industry's largest funding rounds, but research is just one area where AI is being used to assist in the legal profession. Others include contract review and due diligence, analytics, predictions, the discovery of evidence. Look out. And legal advice. Technology and the law are converging. We did a show about that maybe a month or so ago, about the police taking on AI to help them solve crimes. And where they meet, new questions arise about the relative roles of artificial and human agents and the ethical issues involved in the shift from one to the other. While legal technology is largely focused on the activities of the bar, it challenges us to think about applications to the bench as well. And in particular, could AI replace human judges? Well, before going any further, we should distinguish algorithms from artificial intelligence. In simple terms, algorithms are self-contained instructions and are already being applied to judicial decision-making. In New Jersey, for example, the public safety assessment algorithm supplements the decisions made by many judges over bail. Ding! I think we read about that story. By using data to determine the risk of granting bail to a defendant. The idea is to assist judges in being more objective, but they found out it's not, because it has a bias, and increase access to justice by reducing the costs associated with the complicated manual bail assessments. AI is more difficult to define. People often conflate it with machine learning, which is the ability of a machine to work with data and processes, analyzing patterns and allowing it to analyze new data without being specifically programmed. Deeper machine learning techniques can take in some enormous amounts of data, tapping into neural networks to simulate human decision-making. AI assumes machine learning, but it also sometimes is used to describe a futuristic machine superintelligence that is far beyond our own. The idea of AI judges raises important ethical issues around bias and autonomy. AI programs may incorporate the biases of the programmers in the humans they interact with. Remember Tay? And you know, I thought about that yesterday after we looked at that little Japanese AI boy that they gave residency to in Tokyo. I thought about the fact that it had cited Microsoft as actually running that program. And didn't Microsoft learn anything from Tay? She became the sexist, Nazi-loving chatbot on Twitter. For example, Microsoft's AI chatbot named Tay, there we go, became a racist, sexist, and anti-Semitic within 24 hours of interacting while learning with its human audience. But while such programs might replicate existing human biases, the distinguishing features of AI over an algorithm is that it can behave in surprising and unintended ways as it quote-unquote learns. And remember, we also had the Google bots that were playing in virtual reality against each other, and they found that when the resources to survive in the game became scarce, they started shooting and trying to kill each other, which was not expected. Eradicating biases therefore become even more difficult, though not impossible, and any AI judging program would need to account for and be tested for these biases. Giving AI decision-making powers over human cases also raises a fundamental issue of autonomy. In 1976, German-American computer scientist Joseph Weizenbaum argued against replacing humans in positions of respect and care. And specifically, he mentioned judges. He argued that doing so would threaten human dignity and lead to alienation and devaluation. Appealing to rationality, the counter-argument is that human judges are already biased and that AI can be used to improve the way we deal with them and reduce our ignorance. Yet suspicions about AI judges remain, and they are already enough to concern the lead in the European Union to promulgate a general data protection regulation, which becomes effective in 2018. This regulation contains, quote, the right not to be subject to a decision based solely on automated processing, unquote. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And in any case, an AI judge could actually do what human judges claim to do. Well, if AI can correctly identify patterns in judicial decision making, it might be better at using precedent to decide or predict cases. For example, an AI judge recently developed by computer scientists at the University College London drew on extensive data from 584 cases before the European Court of Human Rights. An AI judge was able to analyze the existing case law and deliver the same verdict as the European Court of Human Rights 79% of the time, and it found that this court judgment actually depended more on non-legal facts around the issue of torture, privacy, fair trials, and degrading treatment more than on legal terms. This is an interesting case for legal realists who focus on what judges actually do over what they say they do, and if AI can examine the case records and accurately decide cases based on the facts, human judges could be reserved for higher courts where more complex legal questions need to be examined. But AI may even be able to examine such questions itself. And in the case of positivist judges who separate morality from the law, legal interpretation could be transformed into an algorithmic task according to any given formal method. For example, if we believe the law is socially constructed and follow the thinking of the British legal theorist H.L.A. Hart, then the possibility exists to program both the primary and the secondary rules of any legal system in this way. Primary rules confer to legal rights and duties, telling people, for example, that they cannot murder or steal. Secondary rules recognize, change, or educate these primary rules. For example, deep machine learning AI may be able to process how to recognize the source of the law, like precedent and the Constitution, that are relevant in the case. Alternatively, if we think originalists like Justice Antonin Scalia are right and say that the correct interpretation of the law is what reasonable people living at the time of a legal source's adoption would have understood as its ordinary meaning, then AI natural language processing could be programmed to use this method. Hold on one second. I need to get this. Sorry about that. solve classical questions of legal validity so much as raise new questions about the role of humans. Since if we believe that ethics and morality and law are important, then they necessarily lie or ought to lie in the domain of human judgment. In that case, hold on 1 second. I scrolled and an ad popped. Oh, no. In that case, AI may assist to replace humans in lower courts, but human judges should retain their place as a final arbiter at the apex of any legal system. What if we ended up with, like, Judge Dredd? In practical terms, if we apply this conclusion to perspectives of the American legal theorist Ronald Dworkin, for example, AI could assist with examining the entire breadth and depth of law, but humans would ultimately choose what they consider a morally superior interpretation. Well, doesn't that concern you that AI isn't going to have morals built in? Because I know it does me. Any use of AI over algorithms in legal decision-making will likely progress upwards through the judicial hierarchy, and research bodies like the International Association for Artificial Intelligence and Law are already exploring AI in legal evidence gathering and decision-making. The American judge Richard Posner believes that immediate use of AI and automation should be restricted to assisting judges in uncovering their own biases and maintaining consistency. So as a checks and balance, however, an increasing use of automation and AI decision-making in the courts will inevitably shape human judicial decision-making along the way, and an increased reliance on AI may therefore blur the line between AI and humans over time. And I don't doubt that. Now, think about this one. We've talked about micro-expressions before, and utilizing graphical processing units or GPUs with cameras to scan your face and be able to pick up little twitches that can tell when you maybe are not telling the truth. Well, here is a story that came out July 18, 2017. How you could tell if somebody is lying. Now, could you imagine going up in front of the judge? And maybe this is just on a camera on your computer at home. You don't even have to go to the courts anymore. And this judge is artificially intelligent, and as you're in front of the camera, he starts asking you questions. AI study sees truth in a face. An anonymous AI hopes to eliminate bias in decision-making. Scientists have long studied collective intelligence in animals, but now San Francisco tech firm Unanimous AI is putting collective decision-making technology in the hands of humans. And what is more, they are using human swarms to successfully detect deceit, as outlined in a paper presented at the Future Technology Conference. Unanimous AI, along with Oxford University cognition researcher Niccolo Piscaretti, harness human swarm technology to detect fake smiles. And they found out that working together, humans were wrong about whether a smile was real or fake about half as often as when working alone. This so-called swarm intelligence is what makes colonies of ants, swarms of bees, and schools of fish capable of performing feats that each individual member can't even conceive of. And these animals are not that intelligent on their own, but working collectively, groups of ants can build living bridges while bees can collaborate to pick a new place to live. But humans, not so much. Louis Rosenberg, founder and CEO of Unanimous AI, looked at these emergent properties and decided to apply them to humans. In 2016, the company correctly predicted the top four Kentucky Derby finishers in correct order with its UNU platform. UNU allows humans anywhere in the world to use their computers to weigh in on a question with multiple answers, and the company has used this system to correctly predict the number of sporting events and cultural moments, including the Super Bowl, the Oscars, and the World Series. But what happens when the company pivots? Rosenberg says the results are promising. We've done a lot of work that shows that humans, when you amplify their intelligence as a swarm, ding, playing right into the hands of Kurzweil and linking our neocortexes to the cloud to get better, smarter, and more intelligent and sexy and creative. I think that's a spiel. We'll get significantly smarter, Rosenberg tells Inverse Magazine. That's where we're reading this out of, Inverse.com. And the one thing that we hadn't looked at, though, was in addition to analytical intelligence, what about social intelligence? Does forming a swarm of humans also amplify our social intelligence? Well, initial results suggest that it does. Unanimous AI's UNU technology allows individual users to weigh in an electronic interface that looks kind of like a hexagonal air hockey table. Here's how it works. The golden magnets are all controlled by an individual's user, each of whom can see their own magnet and the center puck, but none of the other user's magnets. And depending on where the user places their magnet, the puck moves. And if more users place their magnet in one direction, the puck moves that way. And UNU is different from a simple majority poll, but it's real time. The users can adjust their answers depending on how they see the puck moving. Well, that doesn't seem like a very good test, because people, they've done experiments like around the time of Milgram's experiment. If they knew that other people were doing something, others will jump on board just because other people are doing it, and they tend to doubt themselves, and it makes them feel that their social responsibility is kind of shaved off if they're not the only ones doing it. In this way, it is a tool for building consensus. Yes, for people who can't make decisions. And that's where this world is headed, by the way. This is teaching us not to be able to make decisions. We have to turn to the cloud and turn to others for them to make decisions for us. In this study, users looked at videos of people smiling, and the people in the videos were either smiling in response to something, real smiles, funny or simple because they were told to, or fake smiles. And then the 168 test subjects were asked to evaluate whether the smiles were real. When they perform this task on their own, they get it wrong 33% of the time. It turns out people are not that good at doing it, says Rosenberg. But when the participants used UNU to build a swarm consensus, they did it much better. And in fact, the error rate fell by one half. It dropped from a third all the way down to a sixth. And people were basically twice as accurate in evaluating if a smile was real or deceitful when working together as a swarm. For us, it was the first research that we've ever done that has demonstrated that not only does this process of swarming amplify a group's artificial intelligence, it also amplifies their social intelligence. He suggests that human swarms could aid with emotionally driven tasks like jury selection or police work, hoping to eliminate biases and gain consensuses. And Rosenberg says that swarms, as opposed to polls, can be less polarizing for groups of people to reach conclusions. And in this way, digital human swarms could be a new and more constructive way for humans to make decisions. They encourage people to find where they agree rather than where they disagree. And that is how bees find the best possible site to live. Often people get stuck on where they disagree. So I don't know about that. I mean, let's build the case for human online swarms and see where that takes us. The next, it'll be utilizing human swarms to decide whether or not to drop a bomb 5,000 miles away over the deserts on a group that they have deemed insurgent. So I don't know if I want to go here. I don't know. This was kind of an interesting story, but it got pretty deep, and this might be something to start a show with, which I was going to at the beginning. I think I'm going to skip this one. This was a case that somebody built against the singularity, and it was looking at how complex systems work together in our world, and introducing another variable to those complex ecosystems, and that variable being the robot, and how it is going to interact with our lives may actually affect evolution of everything. But I'm going to save this one. This gets pretty deep. All right, let's move a little bit forward. So we talked about yesterday the AI arms race that has been launched with this technology, and it's not only affecting the United States, but it is also involving China and Russia, because he who gains the most advanced technology wins. We looked at Xi yesterday talking about how they are investing billions into artificial intelligence to bring companies and research there. And they have also formed fully artificially intelligent cities with the City Brain Project in Hangzhou in collaboration with Alibaba, which I thought was interesting. It was the equivalent of our Amazon. And they are thinking about cookie-cuttering that and rolling it out internationally. Well, this was a pretty good story. It came out of Forbes.com. Will the future of artificial intelligence look Chinese? And this was from November 6th, 2017. China is no longer simply catching up with the U.S., and now it is taking a lead in some fields of AI, say experts. In the meantime, however, the U.S. has looked at China's rapid advances with growing unease. For years, China has watched with envy as the West develops one frontier technology after another, while it could only count on low-cost labor to fuel its growth. But now a fundamental shift is underway in one of the hottest fields of technological innovation, and that being artificial intelligence. China is no longer simply catching up with the U.S. It has now taken the lead in some fields of AI, experts say. And the country's AI advances stem from significant state support coupled with an increasingly vibrant private sector of investors. And be all the billionaires. Beijing, interested in using the technology for wide-ranging purposes, includes surveillance. And remember, we ran across in a story yesterday, they said one of the issues that China doesn't have in the development of artificial intelligence and the 24/7 surveillance technology and the massive exploding databases of data is that they don't have the same privacy concerns and laws that we do here. So Beijing is interested in using the technology for a wide range of purposes, including surveillance, predicting crime, and that was the predictive policing coming soon, transforming city services like in the city brain and boosting national security, like their involvement with their military, and is directing massive capital and policy support to AI. It wants to be the world leader in this field by 2030 by aiming to make the industry worth $150 billion by then. Last week, a state-backed fund led a $460 million investment in Beijing's based facial recognition startup called Megvii, eclipsing the previous record held by SenseTime Group, which is a Chinese facial recognition company that raised $410 million in July, a sum that it said then was the largest single round for an AI company to date. More is on the way, and while the Trump administration has proposed to slash the budget of the National Science Foundation, which is a major hub of scientific research and innovation in the U.S., China's Ministry of Finance has plans to put some $1 billion into AI-related projects this year, and the support includes funding for state-owned enterprises developed to automate oil production lines, design digitized factories, and make faster chips, crunch more data. But not to be undone, China's Ministry of Science is writing new funds totaling tens of billions of yuan for a new AI project, says Zha Hongbin, a professor of machine intelligence at China's Peking University. In the long run, the country's capital support for AI will be no less than major projects such as the He Gao Ji, an initiative unveiled in 2009 that received more than ₩1 billion, which is $15 billion, funded by 2020 to develop technologies, including better chips and computing software, says Wu Fei, a professor at Xinjiang University College of Computer Science. China is devoting a lot of strength, a lot of determination, and a lot of money to AI, and science budgets are growing by leaps and bounds in recent years. The investment and support, indeed, much better than abroad. Although the state involvement is by no means a guarantee for breakthroughs, China also is a dynamic private sector to back it up. Tech giants Alibaba, Baidu, and Tencent now rival the likes of Google and Facebook in its market influence, and they're racing to develop AI. The companies are even setting up labs in Silicon Valley to write better algorithms and produce smarter personal assistants and testing self-driving cars. Last month, Baidu opened its second Silicon Valley research lab, tapping local talent to achieve its goal of putting a fully autonomous vehicle on Chinese roads by 2020. In the same month, Alibaba announced it would spend $15 billion over the next 3 years to recruit top talent for projects related to AI, cloud, and quantum computing. And we read yesterday, those are the three big growth markets happening in countries such as China. And perhaps a direct challenge at Google's AlphaGo program, Tencent has also developed a program based on the complex board game Go, and the company's Juyi, which means fine art, won all 11 games at the Computer Go UEC Cup in Japan in March. The Chinese companies have an advantage over their rivals in the West. Unfettered by privacy regulations and debate, they are relatively free to scoop up gigantic amounts of data on consumption, payments, healthcare, and transportation from China's estimated 750 million internet users to perfect their algorithms and to test their new products. They can tap into China's national data trove of personal IDs, cross-referencing photos with their own data sets to develop facial recognition technologies, although some uses, for example, naming and shaming jaywalkers, is sure to alarm some. Beep, 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 beep. He's jaywalking. Let's put his picture on all the screens in the city and then send him a digital ticket. And in some cases, particularly in image recognition, China has done really well, says Paul Trilio, practice head of geotechnology at New York-based consultancy Eurasia Group. They are now in the same realm as leading Western companies. And in the meantime, however, the U.S. has looked at China's rapid advances with a growing unease. While much of China's AI research is peaceful and has generally done good, including connecting a lost child with his parents 27 years after his abduction via facial recognition, which that's really kind of weird, the Trump administration is increasingly concerned that Beijing might actually eventually use AI technology for military advances, and they should be worried. And for example, the People's Liberation Army has capitalized on AI to build unmanned weapon systems, including aircraft, drones, and underwater vehicles, with a long-term goal of moving towards unmanned, intangent, silent warfare, according to a February testimony in front of the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission. And with these concerns in mind, the U.S. is weighing restrictions on Chinese investment in Silicon Valley, particularly looking at AI and machine learning to shield cutting-edge technologies with national security implications from Beijing. And it comes more and more. The Chinese capital is backing early-stage U.S. AI startups whose technologies are licensed by the military. For example, China's Haiyin Capital, a government-linked fund, invested last year's $1.2 billion in Boston-based Neurala, an AI startup which has licensed its mapping and navigation software to NASA and to the U.S. Air Force, and it was funded by the Chinese. Neurala has said that the company won't give its source codes to its Chinese investors, or so they say. Meanwhile, at home, China's big AI push isn't all good news. State support has given rise to a potential bubble in big data analytics, as funding is more likely to give projects yielding immediate results, but hence the rush to write algorithms to parse various data sets, says Peking University Za. And that means that the U.S. still leads when it comes to the core of AI, and that is teaching machines to behave like sentient beings. Oh, no. The West, for one, has more talent related not just to AI, but other cognitive subjects critical to building intelligent machines. And I don't think that we can be overly optimistic, says still, China is catching up fast, and with the government's help, we are seeing some very good results. So now let's pull Kurzweil out of a hat again. He came up in another story. Ray Kurzweil compares the effect AI will have on humanity to World War II, but he says that we will survive. Kurzweil says that we must continue progress in AI as it will help us overcome suffering. But he says to help us achieve solutions such as poverty, disease, and environmental decline. But he also warns that it will lead to quote-unquote difficult episodes, as power often leads to abuse. Uh-oh. The rise of intelligence will likely lead the world to difficult episodes in the future, says Google exec Ray Kurzweil. But he says that humanity will ultimately pull through. Now listen to this one. He mentioned in an interview that we heard the other day that he was speaking to Christine Lagarde of the International Monetary Fund just recently, which made me raise an eyebrow. Well, listen to this one. At the Council on Foreign Relations this past weekend, and this story was written November 6, 2017, so he was just there, Kurzweil addressed the evolving existential risk posed by technology, noting that great power often opens the door for abuses. Now, this is even Kurzweil warning about this, so this should get us all worried. Progress in technology, however, will also allow humans to overcome some of the world's biggest challenges, according to the futurist, providing solutions for everything from poverty to environmental decline. In an interview with Wired chief editor Nicholas Thompson at the CFR, Kurzweil elaborated on his optimistic views of AI and the future of humanity, arguing that we, quote, have a moral imperative to continue progress in these technologies. According to Kurzweil, progress in AI will play a major role in helping humanity overcome worldwide suffering, including poverty, disease, and environmental degradation. But at the same time, he notes, we must also attend to the peril. We have new existential risks, and these technologies are very powerful, he said. And so I don't worry about that, even though I'm an optimist. And I am optimistic that we will make it through, and I am not as optimistic that there won't be difficult episodes. Kurzweil points to the example of World War II, explaining that powerful technology then posed an existential risk, too, but we exacerbated the losses. I think it is important, though, for people to recognize that we are making progress. The Google exec further delved into his view on hybrid artificial intelligence, revealing how humans and machines could one day merge via neocortex connection. He's always got to pull that one out of his sleeve, in which the brain taps directly to the cloud. And we just read about utilizing things such as swarm intelligence. And doing this would connect humans with both computer systems and other humans' neocortexes and make them funnier, smarter, and a more diverse population. He also knows that 3D printing will soon lead to a number of benefits as early as 2020, allowing for more advanced construction and infrastructure. And also 3D robot babies, we found out yesterday. And the claims follow Kurzweil's predictions that technological singularity will turn us into superhumans in the next 12 years. But Google's director of engineering has made 147 predictions since the 1990s, and he's at a success rate of 86%. The year earlier, Kurzweil explained that while we live in a cybernetic society, we have computers in our brains and machines, and we will be smarter human beings. He claims this is already happening with technology, especially with our addiction to our phones, and he says that the next step is to wire this technology into our brains. And actually, this sentence brings up a very good point, because a listener emailed me yesterday after the show in regards to the question of sex bots and some of the hair-raising things that we were reading about yesterday, how demand has exploded for these things. But the question is, hasn't porn, and not only online porn, but just old-school porn on a videotape or on cable, kind of been where that all started, interacting with the machine for some of those feel-good push-button brain chemicals? And I would have to agree with that. This is just this addiction that they're dragging us closer and closer in proximity to the machine until we eventually merge with us. And I think sex bots are probably a way to sell that to a lot of people who don't have issue with it. And by 2029, he says, computers will have human-level intelligence. And that leads computers to putting them inside of our brains in the future, connecting them to the cloud, and expanding who we are. The process of this began centuries ago with simple devices such as eyeglasses and ear trumpets. And I mean, I hate how they are, you know, pacemakers. And they could dramatically improve human lives. Then came better machines such as hearing aids and machines that could save lives, including pacemakers and dialysis. The second decade of the 21st century, we have come to use organs grown in laboratories, genetic surgery, and designer babies. And in 2002, medical researchers then used enzymes and DNA to build the first molecular computers. This is in 2002. And in 2004, improved versions were being injected into people's veins to cure cancer. And now the trend continues. Kurzweil believes that carbon and silicon-based intelligence will merge to form a single global consciousness by 2029. Now, we had read that there was an ex-Googler who now is forming his own religion to create a religion based on artificial intelligence and worshiping the machine. And when I first read stories about that, and we covered a few of those on the show, I thought about, I just had his name. I'm having a senior moment. Oh, what is his name? L. Ron Hubbard. The father of Scientology. I didn't know L. Ron Hubbard had created his own religion based around science fiction until he died, and I saw his obituary that kind of gave his lifelong creations. And when I was a teenager, probably about 13, I had read Battlefield Earth, and it was a really good book. Science fiction was actually a very big book. It was probably one of the longest books besides the Stephen King that I'd read at that time. But who would have guessed that he would become the father of a religion? So here's a story. The case for an artificially intelligent god, a former engineer of Waymo, one of Google's sister companies under Alphabet, recently filed paperwork to become the CEO of a religion based on the worship of AI. He is not the first person to suggest that the technology can be spiritual, and it is easy to dismiss as silly and offensive, but his timing couldn't be better. The religion in question, called Way of the Future, is a veritable unknown, but there aren't any details to share or analyze. But Anthony Lewandowski, the gentleman responsible for it, didn't exactly choose to alert the media of his plans. The gist of what we know, he's starting a religion based on the worship of an AI godhead, and he applied for a not-for-profit status as a CEO and founder, as opposed to being called a priest or a prophet. Now, remember, we've talked before about artificial intelligence becoming omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent, which is going to happen as the Internet of Things rolls out into your homes and your smart cities and your cars and your devices and your implants. And how hard would it be to take that leap when it becomes more intelligent than humans for it to be the one that is passing judgment upon you, as we just brought about? I don't think this is such a stretch of the imagination. And as a non-practicing, non-denominational, lapsed atheist, it is just as easy for me to turn my nose up at the idea of a machine god as it seems to be for Elon Musk. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around, and I will catch up with you.